League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
No one warned us. No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history.
Simulations showed that you could make it back to the airport.
Not possible. I felt it go.
From director Clint Eastwood, critics are calling it a triumph. 5 stars.
Brace for impact.
What if I didn't get this wrong? What if I endangered the lives of all those passengers?
People call you a hero.
I don't feel like a hero.
Sully, Miracle on the Hudson. In cinemas December 2nd. Certificate 12A.
All right, let's do it. Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Tom, I'm your host. It's an El Clasico this week, and by that I mean it's just me and Dan Kilpatrick. Dan, how are you?
I'm very well. By that you mean we forgot to invite guests.
We didn't forget, we invited late.
One person late,
and they were not available. No. We have to get a guest on, because next week... Next week's the party pod, though.
Every guest who's been on this season.
Do you think maybe we should do a review pod and then a party pod?
I don't think there'll be an appetite for a party pod after we've done the review pod.
That's a fair point. Okay, well...
We're actually going to do that. We should probably start inviting people now. If you're listening and you've been on the pod this season...
If you've been on the pod...
We're doing a party pod.
Yeah, that's the worst invite. Well,
save the date.
We should mention as well that we're not recording in the pub this week. We are recording in Dan's house again. This is now the third time I think we've done this.
Yeah, and my housemates were all in, so we're in one of their bedrooms, which is slightly weird.
They don't do ritualistic chanting though, so
no, or clapping.
They're already a step up on the stonemasons.
Correct.
Stonemasons, yeah. Or Freemasons?
Freemasons, I think. So you're muddling up with stonecutters.
From The Simpsons.
Yeah. You are basically the Masons.
Yeah, I've done well there. Speaking of the Masons and ten others.
Oh, a segue.
That's probably the third best segue we've done all season. Out of five.
that was a cracker.
Yeah. Speaking of Mason and ten other bastards... we played Southampton on Sunday, didn't we?
We did.
Did you go?
I did.
That's a shame.
I went in my professional capacity. It was strange because I had to do an on the whistle report, which I often have to do, but the editor asked me to do a report. He said, do the bulk of the report just on the result and what the consequences are. So I was writing about what would happen, where the situation... Oh, I can't speak. How the table would look if Spurs drew or if Spurs won or if Spurs lost. So I didn't have to write too much about the match itself, which, as it turned out, worked quite well. But oddly, as a result of that, I don't know whether it was just the way I was watching, but I can't really remember much that happened apart from the goals. I couldn't really tell you how Spurs played in that game. Bizarre, because I went.
It felt, I think I was saying before we started recording, that it felt very similar to the results that we had last season, early doors under Pochettino, like the West Brom loss at home. We lost to Stoke at home, not in the same calamitous way, but in that way of it was almost as if Pochettino had spent an hour beforehand telling them exactly what they'd been working on all week and what to do, and then when they got on the pitch, it kind of collapsed a little bit. We went ahead, but ended up losing, which is the ninth time this season we have led in a game and failed to win. I don't think many of those have turned into losses, but obviously Southampton was one of them. But it's only our fifth loss of the season, but it felt more It felt as if I keep thinking we drew. In my head, for some reason, I've got it in my head that we drew, and it was the Chelsea result felt like a defeat, whereas yesterday or Sunday felt much more just like a disappointing home draw that, you know, sort of passed us by a little bit. Do you think it was a hangover from the Chelsea game?
Yes, I do. I do think it was a hangover. It was a strange game because we didn't play particularly well, and I didn't think Saints played particularly well.
They're a good side, aren't they?
Yeah, they are a good side. It's worth saying that they after that result, they've now picked up more points than anyone in the league, including Spurs, apart from Leicester. I think Leicester in 2016.
Right.
So Leicester have picked up, I think, 38 points this calendar year, and Saints have picked up 36.
Hmm.
Which, given how relentless Leicester have been, we've obviously been keeping a close eye on Leicester, watching them win after week. Saints have not been far behind that. Hmm. So they're not a bad side at all. It was a strange game. I do think it was a hangover. I think the psychological effect of losing the title was obviously going to have an impact. I do think this team is made of sterner stuff than previous teams. I don't think this team is Spursy, but that they are still young. And
is that what it is? Because that's what I've asked in the running order. Do you think it's purely down to age and experience?
It's down to a lot of things, but it's also down to the fact we didn't have two of our best players. We really missed Dembele and Ali. It's hard. I remember the back end of last season when we were still just about in with a shout of getting in the Champions League, good fourth, and we went to United and got spanked 3-0, and it was a wretched performance and we deserved to lose, but that game felt like confirmation that it was the end of our top four challenge, because United moved X amount of points above us and it just wasn't going to happen after that. And I think after that our form really trailed off, and that can happen, you know, when you've got a goal in mind and that's gone. You know, Pochettino will be saying to players, you know, reminding them that they were trying to win the title and now that's over and they're not trying to win the title, and you've got to kind of readjust, refocus, realign, and it's not easy to do, and you're going to get bad results. And unfortunately for Spurs, there isn't a lot of time now to turn it around. We've got to get a result on Sunday.
That's it.
To get a result on Sunday.
Yeah, obviously, we'll come on to that, definitely. It's specifically the game itself. Sean Walsh, at Sean Walsh 97, been on the pod. Is there a case for saying Loris has been our worst starting 11 player this season? You're pulling a face there, a real grimace, and I did the exact same thing until I thought about it, and I think that it's not as much of a criticism as it sounds on first listen. It's a good barometer of how good a lot of our players are individually, and it does also highlight that he has made he's made individual errors that are kind of, I think he's obviously built up a lot of credit with us. He has saved us on many occasions, but they're starting to pile up a little bit. I mean, 2 in 3 games from Loris is not something that you would have had maybe beginning to see like last season or something. I don't think he's been as good as in previous seasons, and I struggled to think of a starting 11 player as Sean has asked.
It's a fair point. What we said a few weeks ago when we were talking about Loris after the West Brom game was that his mistakes have tended to cost Spurs quite dearly.
And as goalkeepers do that.
Yeah, and that is there. That's always the case with goalkeepers. They're human like all other players, and they're going to go through bad patches of form like all other players. And for a goalkeeper, unfortunately, a mistake normally means a goal, whereas for anyone else on the pitch, you can normally get away with it. They're not clangers.
They're not Gomez.
Gomez mistakes. Yeah, he really should have saved that first shot, and he should have done better against West Brom. To answer Sean's question, I think there is a case, simply because I'm struggling to think of anyone else who's...
Yeah.
Simply because I don't think there is anyone else who's been worse.
Yeah.
I don't want to... I mean, the only other player I think you can make a case that's been worse is maybe Lamella.
For the start of the season.
He's been a bit, he's been more up and down.
Yeah.
Norris still makes a world-class save per game. That's kind of his baseline, isn't it? One brilliant save every single match. And I think over the course of the season, you know, there was all that bollocks that Cech's going to give Arsenal 10 to 15 points or whatever. I'm sure over the course of the season, if someone was to do a very acute analysis of it, Lloris would have saved us a lot more points than he's cost us.
Yeah, there's a reason why you're second or wherever in the league, and you don't get there by having a really dodgy goalkeeper.
No, he still is one of the only truly world class players in our squad, I think.
I don't think he's world class purely because of his.
I do. I think if you're going to take. If let's say, what does world class mean? Let's say it means like the top seven or eight players in that position in the world. Yeah. I think he's in the top seven goalkeepers.
I'd agree then. I do think there's quite a big gap between him and the top two in the world, though.
What, Neuer and De Gea?
And De Gea, yeah. I think De Gea's ridiculous. I think. And the idea as well, something that I wanted to bring up, I may have even raised it last week, about Lloris being captain. And I think after West Brom equalised and during the Chelsea game, particularly when Chelsea started pressing and got that goal back from the first goal back, I expected more from someone like Lloris. And I felt like he was being a bit French about it. To be stereotypical, it was all very kind of meh.
Of the shoulders.
There was a really big shrug. There was a kind of a look at everyone else. And I think I said it after the West Brom game. When they scored, the only person that I saw really sort of clapping and sort of speaking to every player on the pitch was Vertonghen. And I don't think Vertonghen should be captain by any stretch, but that's what I would have expected. And maybe a part of that was Lloris feeling a bit sheepish about coming for a ball that he shouldn't have done. Yeah. But I expected a bit more from him, and I think that the whole Chelsea game, someone needed to calm us down a little bit. And I know instructions came from the top. You know, Poch, there's been nothing that Poch has said in the week since the Chelsea game that suggests that he had no control over what those players were doing.
Yeah.
He seemed to be very much up for them doing everything that they did against Chelsea. The captain is the manager on the pitch,
isn't it?
Yeah, I get
that. I said a couple of weeks ago that I do think the captaincy is just an armband. A couple of people disagreed with me, but I stand by that.
Disagree with that. I think there's three players ahead of him that... if you lead him by example,
what I meant by that is that it doesn't really matter if you're wearing the captain's armband or not. Yes, it gives you a certain authority, maybe. And are there rules that mean that the captain? Are sometimes rules where the captain refs can only speak or whatever.
Yeah, that's crap. Yeah, but it doesn't really follow.
No one ever enforces that.
I
think if you're going to be a leader on the pitch, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah,
if you're the captain or not. The problem with the Chelsea game is it really did feel like we needed a sort of timeout, or when a player was down hurt or whatever, someone needed to grab hold of Dyer, grab hold of the back four, grab hold of all the team, basically get them in the huddle and say, look, we're 2-0 up here, or we're 1-0 up, whatever, calm the fuck down, like, don't get involved. We needed someone to do that, and it's not going to be the goalkeeper, is he? That he's not going to run halfway up the pitch to the centre circle and get everyone in the huddle. So I quite like the idea of a defender or a midfielder being the captain, but at the same time I think someone like Vertonghen or Dembele or Alderweireld should just be doing that anyway, regardless of whether they're wearing the armband.
I think I do agree that if you're a leader you don't need something on your arm to say, you know, to prove that you, but I do think that it still holds some weight, the captain's armband. And I think Rich Arrowsmith said it last week on the pod that he feels quite similar to me in that he doesn't like goalkeepers being captains. And I'm not... I can take it or leave it, but if I had to choose, I don't feel like it's as obvious a decision as it was at the beginning of this season or halfway through last season whenever Cabal got dropped.
Who would you put in?
Who would I give captaincy to? I think I'd give it to Toby. I think it's the leading by example thing.
Yeah. I can't disagree with that, but then you've got to think about the effect it would have on Loris to take the away from him now.
Of course. Yeah.
He's the oldest player. He's the best player. Well, as I said before, I still think he's one of the sort of only world-class players. One of the only world-class players in the squad. I'm not going to list them now, but...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't know.
It feels like the last three pods have all kind of merged into one a little bit. It feels a bit of a deflating... I think we all knew it had ended after West Brom, but obviously the Chelsea game was really disappointing considering the position that we put ourselves in. And then we've just had that, you know, and it's... I don't want it to be sort of rolling to an end this season because it doesn't deserve to peter out like this, does it, at all?
No, it doesn't, and it really doesn't, and it does feel a bit like that. I mean, someone said this week, I can't remember who now, that they've never wanted such a great season to end so quickly, and I couldn't really agree more. It's just like, we need to go to Newcastle and get a point, get a win, whatever. Just make sure we finish second, make sure we finish above them. And then we can just look back on how glorious it was. But at the moment, since the West Brom game, it's all been a bit unpleasant, really.
Yeah.
And as soon as that title was more or less gone, it did feel like it was going to be a struggle.
I think you said earlier about last season, the last few games after United, it really petered out. I think we went on a really bad run, didn't we?
I think we won the last two or three, but before that we were on a crap run of not having won five or six or something.
And drew away at Burnley and lost at home to Villa and stuff like that. Really just bleak end.
Mm.
And I think it just feels like the same thing, but over the course of the last four games, like the last four games of the season rather than the last couple of months. Just on that as well, a lot of people were remarking on how the players looked exhausted during the game against Southampton. Do you think maybe
I think that's bollocks.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's bollocks. Whenever Tottenham lose, whenever they get a bad result, everyone's like, "Bah, they're tired."
It's just
the default reaction to Tottenham losing. Maybe. I don't buy it at all.
I think the Chelsea game would have really... That's
not physical energy it would have sapped out of them. It's what we mentioned before, it's the emotional, so the psychological impact of readjusting your aims for the season and getting used to the fact that the title's not going to happen. That's what
starting
I think
to look down rather than up.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa. that's what I think would have taken it out of them. I don't... they're the fittest team in the Premier League, we've known that from day one. The fact they're all young guys helps them. I mean, Kane said after the game, I know he would say that, but he said, "Yeah, I feel fine." Mm. I don't buy it personally. I mean, I think, you know, we could go and smash Newcastle and look fresh as a daisy.
That's true. And you always look good when you win, don't you?
You always look good when you win. That's just my view. I'm not saying I haven't looked at the stats or anything. Maybe Spurs ran less, sprinted less against Saints than they have done on average this season. But it seems to me that that's the default position of people that people take when a result goes badly. And that's understandable because the way Pochettino's Tottenham play is very high energy and it is based on the success, and the energy levels seem to go hand in hand more than most teams.
Speaking of Southampton running and energy, just quickly, would you take Shane Long in the summer?
Yes. I would take Shane Long.
I don't rate him as a striker as such, but he's just such a pain in the arse.
Yeah, it was very noticeable in the first 20 minutes of the game. They were struggling to get hold of the ball, and he was just up front by himself, quite isolated, but he was causing problems. Just, you know, we all know that Spurs quite like to play out. the back. They like to take their time, pick a pass. And the transition from attack to defence was not going well. And I think missing Dembele was a big part of that.
Yeah.
But the fact that Shane Long was just pissing everyone off, running around like a maniac, was also a big part of it.
Yeah. Him and Mane in the summer would be nice. Give them chatters.
Yeah, Saints are a funny one because they've done... If the basis for Leicester's season was the last couple of months of last season... And there's a very strong case that Southampton could do really well next year because they've had a great year. And it will be really interesting to see if they can keep hold of Mane and Tadic and Wanyama and Long.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Spurs will be among the first clubs to be interested in those guys. But I think if they keep Koeman and keep all their players, then everyone's talking about Liverpool and City and... all these teams are going to improve next year. Southampton are going to improve next year as well.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
It would be.
Well, I think I might go, actually. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah. We've got two things to talk about, I think, of note. Do you want to talk about the Arsenal thing? Or should we... let's touch quickly on the Levy statement. Daniel Levy, before the Southampton game, mentioned quite a lot about the battle on and off the pitch. So, you know, I think there was a bit of a heavy reference towards the Chelsea game, I suppose, but the team as a whole and how we are now. But off the pitch, he's obviously talking about the stadium plans and things like that. Looks like it's going to be another summer of we're not just going to go out and splash the cash. We never do. We never have done. Well, we did it once, and Levy can always point to that summer of 2013 and say, well, that's what you get if you spend a lot of money sometimes. How did you take that?
I thought it was quite boring, actually.
Do you really? I thought it was quite forthright for him.
Really?
Yeah, I don't see that. You don't see that much from him.
I'm really surprised. I think his end of season message is normally a lot more frank than that. It's normally quite frank.
I think he
like under the Sherwood, you know, the Sherwood AVB.
I think there was a lot to be frank about.
But you know, it's often between the lines what he's saying. But if you know the context, you can normally get a gist of what he thinks. And I thought, probably because this season has been so good and so positive and so amazing, there wasn't really much for him to say. You know, he normally gives a bit of a hint about the transfer plans, doesn't he? He normally says, you know, we'll be looking to build the squad in the summer.
Do you think he's maybe tempering some expectations a little, considering... we are ahead of schedule, and I think he used that phrase, didn't he?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And he said...
he certainly said there are going to be challenges, and he said there are going to be battles on and off the pitch.
And I think that, you know, we've got Champions League football now, and it would be very easy for us to think, with that plus the TV money, plus the very obvious holes in the squad, not huge, but there's obvious holes where we need to improve and build. I wondered if he was maybe just putting it out there early, you know, sort of don't expect... your 20 million.
But he didn't say that, did he? I mean,
no, you've said about reading between the lines and things like that. I mean,
I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think when Levy says so little that whenever he says something, it's always worth taking note and it's always interesting. But I was writing it up as a kind of news article, and I was struggling to pick out what I would describe as a line, a sort of something to take away from it. It felt to me as if he was saying, this has been great, we're ahead of schedule.
What else
but,
you got?
Yeah, but, I mean, he did more or less confirm that the the stadium plans are being fast-tracked, didn't he? Which I think means that maybe Sunday was potentially the last ever full-capacity game at the Lane.
Taken down, as far as I know, they pretty much said they're starting work on Paxton the minute the last person steps outside the ground.
Yeah,
sort of
they'll be doing it now.
Yeah, just imagine that to the builders waiting outside.
Yeah.
Come on! so it looks that way.
And Wembley, I've been told, this is a bit of ITK for you, that Wembley's happening next season, Champions League.
How do you feel about that?
I'm a bit disappointed. I don't have. It feels like it's a shame because in the last season of White Hart Lane to have Champions League nights, under lights, the music, the occasion, the visiting teams. That's why you want to be in the Champions League. Spurs don't honestly think we're going to go and win it.
Yeah,
we're not there to be champions of Europe. We're there for the prestige and for the occasion. You want to do that in your home that you're about to leave, in your home that's about to be torn down. You want to enjoy, you know, savour those occasions, and it feels like we're being denied that.
I do agree. I do think, again, with the whole we're ahead of schedule thing, he probably anticipated if we have to do it, it will be Europa League games. Or, we wouldn't have gone anywhere, would we, if we were in the Europa League this season. We would have done half-capacity Europa League games.
I don't think we'll be having the talk to the FA.
I think we're almost a victim of our own success with this season. I think that the decision was probably made a little while ago. We thought that, you know what, if the one Champions League season we had was that 2010-11... it wasn't a bad season to have in it, if you're talking about it being about the prestige and all these clubs coming. We had the champions, we had AC Milan, we had Real Madrid come to us. So I wonder if maybe it just ran away with us a little bit, and by then the wheels were already in motion. It seemed like a really good idea. Just get it done. And we've... I mean, I'm not...
The trouble is, Wembley's too big, isn't it? That's my concern. I hate being in a stadium when there's empty seats.
I think they'll cordon off the top tier, won't they?
Yeah, they will. But you're still in a stadium with empty seats.
Yeah, there probably will be. And if we do get Sparta Prague or something like that at home, we might struggle. We're not going to sell out because you're not going to want to go to Wembley to watch your team play a Champions League game. We want to go to Wembley to see Tottenham play the FA Cup final, League Cup final.
It's a financial decision, isn't it? It's because Levy will be thinking losing X number of seats, White Hart Lane, whatever it is, 6,000-7,000 seats, that's X amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And
in an already quite small stadium.
Yeah, in an already quite small stadium. And then you have to balance that against, well, we'll be paying the FA a fee, whatever it might be. I think the fee I've been told for the year at Wembley is 22 million. So
really?
For just the Champions League games, I don't know, 5-6 million, whatever, he'll probably make that in one match from ticket sales.
Mm.
So it's a financial decision that will work in the club's favour, and I don't think it's a decision that will please the majority of fans, put it that way.
Yeah, it
obviously but on the flip side, there'll be people that couldn't otherwise go to Champions League games that are massive Spurs fans that will be able to, because there'll be 20,000 more seats.
Yeah, pros and cons, of course. Okay, so we have got Newcastle on Sunday, the last game of the season.
Yeah, you going?
No, I was. The idea was to go and to maybe camp or something. This was when I was really anticipating us taking it to the last day.
Yeah.
And I thought, it doesn't matter what way it goes, if you're in Newcastle for that night, we've
taken second place
the last day, it'll be great. Well, yeah. For better, for worse.
Yeah.
But also, I was planning on maybe looking into getting tickets in the home end, and I don't know if you've seen on Twitter, there's a guy called Sir Roozy, at Sir Roozy, I think it is.
Yeah.
He attempted to get tickets in the home end. Oh no, he attempted to buy a membership for Newcastle,
right,
with a view of getting tickets for the last game. And they sent him a letter back saying, after working with Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, we have seen that you are also a member of them, and therefore we can't allow people to mix in the home end. That's
okay. Fair enough.
I think that's probably fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, that's what happens to football, isn't it? You don't... The fans can sit together. So,
yeah, I've seen...
Unless you're at Fulham.
I saw it... Yeah, the neutral stand. I was at QPR, a Spurs QPR home game a few years ago when we beat them 3-1, I think, under Harry. And a QPR fan jumped up and cheered when they got a goal back at 2-0 or something like that.
Right.
And you've never seen someone... if you were to draw regret on someone's face, it would have looked exactly like him. And I just thought, you can't... I couldn't sit there and watch. I know we're going on to a really weird topic, but I could not do it and be sitting on my hands. I know someone that went to the Arsenal 3-2 game, the one where Cabal got the winner, and he was in the Arsenal end. And he said that as soon as
Cabal... wouldn't have been at all enjoyable.
Well, he said that the penalty, he was obviously able to anticipate Van der Vaart running up, taking it. He was like, you know what, I can do this. Yeah. When the ball goes into the box for Cabal, apparently he said it went in, and all he did was go... a really high-pitched noise. And all the people went mental around him and were like screaming at Arsenal players. So he was like, I can sort of... be a little tiny bit animated here, and he just went really loudly, and that was it. I mean, God knows how he got through that alive, because I would have died.
The only game I've ever done was I went and watched Chelsea in the home end, but it was kind of the perfect game for it, because it was early in Santini's reign. Well, in Santini's very short reign.
0-0?
Yeah, it was the part of the bus game. So we went there and we were total shit. We had like Timothy Atuba and no Pamela at fullback. And we ground out a 0-0, and they had the ball for 90 minutes. So I suppose I had no chances for me to react to. They just defended. I was next to my brother, also a Spurs fan, also in the Chelsea end. And the final whistle, we just looked at each other, sort of suppressed grins, shook hands and just walked out. I don't think we said a word for 90 minutes. But
I'll tell you what, I would take that on Sunday, ground out, part of the bus, 0-0. I don't think it's going to happen, but we need a point.
They didn't score against Villa.
They didn't. And they could be down, because Sunderland have got, is it Everton?
Everton on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, and if Sunderland get a point, is that right? Is it all over?
I think they need to win.
Right, which, I mean, Everton have been on the beach for about 3 years, but...
Yeah.
There's every chance
they lost to a drunken Leicester.
Yeah.
4-0.
They lost to a Leicester that had a bunch of guys that had been on the piss for 4 days.
Yeah.
If Sunderland win that, it's all over. We go to Newcastle with them with nothing to play for. And judging by the comments from people like Harry Kane today... The players do believe, they do know that there is something to play for.
They need to fucking know, because I mean, it's hard to articulate just how gutting it would be if we finished below them.
After this of all seasons.
After this, it would just... I mean, to say it would take the shine off our best ever Premier League season would be an understatement, really. I'll never go so far as to say it would ruin it, because that is not to see the bigger picture of how far we've come this season, but it would be a real sickener.
Yeah, it'd be a disaster.
Yeah, we need to get the job done.
How do you see us getting the job done?
Well, I think it does depend on what's happened to Newcastle, whether they're...
What would you prefer? And I know it sounds like a silly question, but I thought about this, and I thought almost...
I prefer them to be down, I think. The thing is, I went to university in Newcastle, I do have a soft spot for them. I think Sunderland are a horrible club, despite the nice Spurs connections. So if I had to pick, I'd want Newcastle to stay up at Sunderland's expense. But now that Spurs are in the equation, I just hope they're down.
Because Arsenal have got Villa on the last game.
There's every chance
there's a 14-goal swing there as well.
they're going to win that 4 or 5 nil, as we all know. So Spurs, you know, there's no point checking, refreshing the score at the Emirates. No. We know they're going to win.
Yeah,
I think I'd prefer if Newcastle were down and there was no hope there. I've seen a few people saying, you know, if they need to win, they'll have to come at us, and that might work in Spurs' favour. But St James's Park is a difficult place to go. It is, especially the Geordies get behind them. Sorry, Newcastle, I just hope they're down and hope's gone and they're deflated and we can... Well, you'd like to think we can beat them at the best of times, but, I mean...
You saw what happened earlier on in the season as well. That's the first loss. Well, first loss. That was the loss that broke our unbeaten sequence, didn't it? And that was a poor performance from us. So it can happen. If we play poorly as a unit... We went there last season, won 3-1. I think it's when Harry Kane got his 30th goal of the season. And they had a protest, didn't they? And half the ground was empty. Really empty. We seem to lose to them at home. And whenever we go to St James's Park, they're always in some sort of mutinous state. Because we won there and won 4-0 the year before under Sherwood, didn't we? With four centre mids. Chadley scored an absolute worldie.
Well, Chadley always scores against them.
Oh, yeah, he does. It could do us a favour if the atmosphere is sort of focused on the managed, or rather like Mike Ashley as it usually is. It might do us a favour if they're concentrating on fighting amongst themselves while we're just win. Just,
I mean,
please,
whatever
just
happens,
win.
Though, it's still their last home game of the season, and there'll still be an atmosphere about the place, I imagine.
What, as in a good one?
Just an atmosphere about the place.
I think there'll be, if they're down, after the performance they gave against Villa.
I'm not saying necessarily a good one, I'm saying an atmosphere. Yeah, I think we want them to be down. I mean, there's, someone's made the point, did I just say this? That if they need to stay up, but yeah, I did just say that.
Look,
Spurs should be beating Newcastle regardless of the situation. But as you said, early in the season, they were a worse team. They were managed by Steve fucking Clarence early in the season, and they still came to the lane and beat us 2-1. So I don't know what more I can say. Really, just I like to think these players are made of sterner stuff than previous teams. I've said that so many times this season. We've had a wobble, but it's still in our hands, and we've just got to make sure we get it done.
Never lost. We have not lost 2 games in a row all season.
We haven't. No.
What
we hadn't conceded.
About?
We hadn't conceded 2 goals in consecutive games until the last couple of games. So.
As a side note, as well to this game, and an added incentive. Kane is he a goal ahead in the Golden Boot?
He's one goal ahead, yeah.
Ahead of Aguero and Vardy, who are both...
I think of Vardy with Aguero one behind.
Right,
him.
Okay. So, big incentive. Probably get a goal. Probably... It's probably his, isn't it? But someone... Dominic Taylor 97 asked, was Kane more concerned about winning the Golden Boot than squaring it to a teammate in a better position? I think he's referring to the chance that Kane...
When he out-muscled the defender and cut inside. I didn't think there was an obvious teammate in a really good position.
I just think he's a striker, and strikers shoot in those positions.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the best strikers do.
Yeah, I think it'll be on his mind. But I honestly do believe that Kane is a player who wants to win football games more than he wants to win personal accolades. So, what was the score at that point? 1-1?
1-1.
So, I think if he'd have genuinely thought there was a teammate who could score, he'd probably have spread it.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Do you think he's... I put it here, do you think he's the most valuable player in the Premier League at the moment?
He's certainly up there, yeah.
For return, age, and...
I mean, I think he really deserves the Golden Boot. I mean, I'm not saying... I mean, Vardy is a racist, but he's obviously been quite good. And he's got that record. But Kane, the fact that Kane is just... no one's talking about the fact that Spurs don't have a second striker anymore. It's just been completely forgotten since January. And that's because of Kane. He's done it all by himself. After a slow start, he has not had a drop in form. It's quite extraordinary. He's basically been on form since the Bournemouth game.
Yeah.
Or the City
game. City game, yeah.
Which was what, November?
Earlier, I think. City
October?
Was...
October?
City was the game after we got knocked out of the League Cup, which was the first round that we were in.
So I think that's...
September, October sort of time.
Yeah,
end
so he's more or less been on form for about six, 7 months. Straight, which is remarkable, and he hasn't. There's no chance of him ever being dropped for a league game, and for a lot of players, that would be maybe the catalyst for a dip in form, knowing that you're undroppable. But for him, it just seems to spur him on.
Yeah.
I think Vardy has been great.
They're talking just on what you were saying about who people were talking about. There's a lot of talk about Sturridge and will he make the Euros and things, and I don't ever feel this bias thing. I mean, obviously you're biased towards your own players, but I never feel like our players are being unfairly treated in the media. I don't think Kane gets enough credit in terms of how important he could be for England. So I know Sturridge has, in inverted commas, done it already, but you've got a guy who's on form, stayed fit for two seasons when, well, let's call it a season and a half, when he's been the only striker at a club that is worth putting on the pitch, and scoring goals. Like, they bang on about Sturridge. I don't think he's anywhere near Kane. I really don't.
Yeah, but aren't you the kind of person that would be pissed off with the media for overhyping England players, and now you're saying they haven't hyped up Kane enough?
I don't really. No, I'm not really. I think.
No, I'm not saying no. That came out wrong. You know, don't. Everyone always says.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
We're setting him up for a fall, and now you're wondering why.
Well,
I know what you're getting.
No, I know
at,
what you mean.
Just,
but what, for me, if that is the way that the English media and the English public approach footballers, then why isn't anyone talking about Kane in that respect?
Well, I think there has been quite a significant clamour for him to be England's central striker. I mean, about a month ago, after the Germany and Holland friendlies, all the talk was Wayne Rooney doesn't deserve to be in this 11. Wayne Rooney should be in the bench or move to midfield at a stretch, and it should be Kane or Kane and Vardy.
Mm.
So I think there has been calls for him to start up front, for England to be the leading man. And I think there will be quite a big backlash if, come the first game or come the first friendly where Hodgson plays his full 11, Rooney is up front. I don't think that's going to happen now.
No.
Rooney's probably going to be at number 10, isn't he? And Kane's going to be central striker.
Would have thought so.
Vardy in the wide position. And that shows how good he is, because Rooney, whatever you might think of him, is still England's top scorer and captain.
Yeah.
And for someone, a 22-year-old guy in his second full season in the Premier League, to push him out of his favourite position says a lot.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but I suppose I see what you mean.
Let's do the final question. We've got two questions. E at EBBP called it Schrodinger's Spurs. Is it possible to have a fantastic season and still be Devo, which I believe is the children's way of saying devastated these
Correct.
Days, if we finish below Arsenal? I know we kind of covered this anyway, but it's a funny one. It is to go over it again. It's a really funny one, isn't it?
It's really hard to articulate, because you've got to see the bigger picture. You have to say we've had a fantastic season, whatever happens on Sunday, and that we've come so far, and that we've really laid the foundations this year. It's like Levy said in his statement, this has been a season where so much has come together for the club, and that's undeniable. Poch's philosophy seems to be really well ingrained. He seems to have a squad that will walk through fire for him. We've got loads of great young players. The new stadium's got green lighted three or four times by the relevant people. Everything's there. But it would just be so
shit. It would just be so shit
to finish below them. But that's almost makes it worse that it has been so good. Because for them, it's been a crap season.
Yeah.
And they would always be able to. It would be on a par with Lasagna Gate and
Mind
the Gap. Mm. It really would. It would just. But I mean, we'd deal with it. We've had to deal with it before. We'll have to deal with it again, I'm sure. But I'm of the school of thought that it's hard to progress as a club until we get that monkey off our back. And
yeah.
You said it before about going to Stamford Bridge and winning. I also agree with that. These are two things we just need to do.
Mm.
And once we've done them, you know, then the only thing left is the Premier League title, and then. We'll be perfectly set up for it.
Yeah.
So let's just fucking do the job Sunday. Let's beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in September whenever we get them, and then win the league next year.
Yeah. Bit of rallying cry there, Dan. Last question, Phil at Single Malt Suds, friend of the pod. Am I wrong for leaving the lap of honour yesterday due to feeling utterly crestfallen? I wanted to end on this one because I think it was interesting. A few people said that they really struggled to sit through the lap of honour. Which is funny because in years past we've had the same sort of disappointment of not reaching our goals on the day of the lap of honour, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We've pretty much known that one or two of those players, as they're waving to the fans saying thanks, are saying see you later as well. But we haven't got that this season, and yet there was that underlying depression about it. Do you think it was wrong to leave the lap of honour on the back of the
defeat? I
don't
think it was wrong, because Phil can't help how he felt.
Do what you want, mate.
Phil's a great man, he speaks gospel, but I can't really understand that personally. Just because, you're not... The lap of honour isn't about the game.
You're not looking at the whole pie.
Yeah, exactly. players are the fruit. You're
which part are you?
I'm not doing it. it's not a lap of honour for. It's not a lap of honour for the game. It's not like when Liverpool drew with West Brom. did a celebration in front of the cop or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's a lap of honour for the season. That's just the way I see it. So even if you get spanked 5-0, but it's been a great season, you're sort of staying. It's sort of an added bonus. You're sort of staying at the end to say, well done.
Mm.
So I think it was good that so many people stayed, but I don't blame Phil for going. If he felt a bit gutted, it was a bad result.
I like the lap of honour. I quite like it.
Yeah,
It used to feel like in years past that they were taking the piss almost. Like, I remember my mate has had a season ticket for 15, 16 odd years. And during the 90s, the real awful time, like the late 90s. And he was like being clapped by Øyvind Leonardsen after the disgrace of performance that he used to put in on that pitch. Just felt as if they were laughing at us. So we're a long way from that, aren't we?
Yeah, I quite like it because I do think it's one of those moments where the fans get a little bit closer to the players. Because normally you have this separation and then the players finish the game and they'll clap the fans, they'll clap all four sides of the stadium, and then before you know it, sort of very quickly, they're down the tunnel and then behind the TV cameras or just a sort of away from public view.
Yeah.
And with the lap of honour, you get this moment where they bring their kids out, they bring their wags out, and you get a little glimpse of sort of behind the scenes, as it were. Mm. And I think it's quite nice. And I saw some of them, certainly some of the guys who were walking down the tunnel, a few of the fans had kind of run into the press box bit because that had emptied. And there were a few guys kind of leaning over and saying, great season. Kyle Walker stopped and shook a few hands. And I think it was quite a nice touch.
Yeah.
I quite like the lap of honour.
I think on a season like this where the fans we have got a bond back, or certainly stronger than it's been in as long as I can remember, I think. You do, even if you are only paying lip service to it in a way, it is a good thing to sort of cement that, isn't it? And I think even Levy's statement said it about that. And they released that video, didn't they? And Spurs official put that video out on Twitter that was about the connection between us and the fans. The team and the fans. And it was one of those. It was about a minute and a half, I think. And it was just sort of littered with Pochettino quotes about how together we are stronger.
Yeah,
and stuff
I think
like
that's
that.
Yeah, that's good PR. But obviously that connection has been restored this year.
Mm. You think of where it was.
Yeah, it was fractured, and we've spoken on the pod about the Swansea game that felt like a real turning point just because we were 1-0 down for so long. It was a must-win game, and I never heard. Even a murmuring of discontent. It was like the whole lane was behind the team, and they got the two goals back, and I think that was in part because the crowd was so supportive.
Mm.
And just as an aside, did you see the half-time I've forgotten his name now, I should have looked it up.
Oh, the little lad.
The lad with no limbs.
Who had meningitis.
Yeah, I
meant to put his name in the running order because I've forgotten.
Yeah, I forgot his name as well, but it happened right in front of me and I cried a bit.
He warmed up with him, didn't he?
Yeah, he came out of the tunnel with Dembele and Paul Coit did an interview with him, and he just sort of kicked the ball around with the subs for a few minutes, but it was really nice.
Yeah,
it was my favourite, certainly my favourite half-time entertainment, which isn't hard because normally Mickey has a
Chris Jones coming out again.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
It was really nice.
It's a nice thing to do, but we are seeing that a bit more now.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie's brother was another really, really nice one. I do love Spurs, and I do think they're a good club for backing their fans and doing the right thing.
The love's back, isn't it?
Yeah, it is back.
Despite, well, we'll see after Newcastle.
Yeah, just get it done.
Get it done and we'll talk.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, having an argument with your girlfriend and then, like, you don't really want to talk to them, but it's just like, right, if you do the washing up, then maybe this afternoon.
I'm single, mate. I can't relate to this analogy.
I'm getting married, so this is my life now. I'm getting a
view into your domestic life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's,
so you do the washing up and then you have a little chat.
Yeah, it's just that you know, beating Newcastle is the equivalent of, like, cleaning the cat's litter tray or something. Just you do something, you know, that's practical, that's good, that puts you back in the good books. Doesn't have to be a big gesture.
Yeah.
Just a 0-0 at Newcastle.
Fine.
Nothing big, but then, you know, then we start. Then you can start a conversation.
Okay.
Up again. So that's what's at stake, Tottenham. Okay, so that's it for probably the penultimate podcast of this season. We'll be back next Monday, won't we?
Yeah.
For a season review, I imagine. We'll talk about it. I'm not sure what
we'll talk about it. Hopefully, it'll be good to make. Maybe we do one later in the week and we get on loads of guests and we get really pissed and hopefully celebrate finishing second above Arsenal.
Yeah, we'll do a shot for every point that we've taken this season. Oh, that's what I was going to mention as well. We've now scored the most amount of goals we've ever scored in the Premier League season. 68 or something?
Yeah.
Which I think beat Martin Yole's year.
Was that right? Yole's year top?
Well, the only reason I'm thinking that is because I'm sure one year our goals for was about 65 and goals against was 62. It was ludicrous. It was in Yole's, like, second year when we were beating Reading 6-4 and stuff like that.
With Berber and Keane up front.
No one in defence. So I thought I'd add that. Anyway, yeah, so thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next Monday. This has been the Tottenham Way. Come on, you Spurs.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.